Welcome to Infernal Dominion, India's only extreme metal radio show with your host Ankit. Today's feature is yet another spectacular one, as I have Mr. Adrian Bickel, drummer of the legendary Australian funeral doom metal band Mournful Congregation, who is doing an exclusive radio interview only for Infernal Dominion and Brutal Existence Radio. Greetings, Adrian. Thanks for being on the show. How are you doing?
Thanks. Thank you, Ankit. Thanks for having me.
So what is happening these days with you and the band?
At the moment, we're just pretty much doing the last guitar section of the new album, so some of the lead tracks, and we've got to go back in the studio for, I think, one more day just to do some acoustic parts, but the majority of the recording for that fourth album's done, so it'll just be finalising the guitar parts, and then just mixing and the usual artwork, okay. That kind of gear.
Mm-hmm. That sounds nice.
Yeah, it's doing good.
So when can we expect the album to be finally released?
I think we're looking at about June at this stage. So we haven't got a 100% date or anything, but it's always been aimed for the middle of the year. So
right.
At this stage, it's on track for that.
All right, that sounds amazing. I'm just totally waiting for that one.
Excellent, yeah. It's going to be good to get it out. We spent probably more time preparing this than we ever have before, so it's going to be good for us as well to get it released.
All right, that sounds amazing. And moving on, the amazing entity Mournful Congregation is existing since about 18 years now, and the band has certainly carved a niche in the underground doom metal scenario. So tell us about your association with the band, like when did you join the band, and were you associated with any other band before that?
No, actually, I pretty much went travelling straight after I finished high school, so I was still a teenager. I came back to Australia, and I was looking for, at the stage, I really hadn't discovered the most extreme doom. I liked a lot of the kind of early Peaceville releases and that kind of material, but this is around 1997, and I was looking for just like-minded musicians, and I'd put an ad up in one of the local kind of heavy music stores here in Adelaide, and Damon and one of his friends just happened to pop into that store, I think, that week and see my ad with my list of influences, and Damon gave me a call, and that was pretty much how I went around his place, and he gave me at that stage I just had the first two demo tapes, and he gave me those, and I was like, what the hell, I'd never heard anything. The first one was more Death Doom, I think, but where they were going with the second demo was, I was really into it because it was so full on for anything I was hearing at the time. So yeah, that was 14 years ago, and yeah, ever since then we've sort of just kept going with it. That was sort of how I came, but I'd never met the guys before because they came from a place called Loxton, which is about 2 or 3 hours out of Adelaide, so it was only around that time that Damon had relocated to our city, and so really before that it was all done, you know, a few hundred kilometres away from where we're based now.
All right.
So that was, yeah, it.
Nice story. So who was the drummer before you joined the band?
Actually, the guy called Ben Petch, he still works with us. He still lives out in the country. But when we go on tour, he's one of our session guitarists on tour.
Okay.
And at the time, on the first two demos, he played guitar and drums. So he's a bit of a multi-instrumentalist. So yeah, early on it was him taking... There was really just him and Damon doing all the guitars and drums. And on that second demo, the vocals as well.
All right.
It was a two-piece, yep.
All right, nice. And talking about Mournful Congregation's music, your band of doom metal is very somber, unique and emotionally enrapturing, just the way how funeral doom metal should be done. But there are various qualities which keeps your band a step ahead from many bands in the style due to the stellar musical execution, which is totally different from many other bands. So enlighten us and the listeners about the band's vision and the musical style which has been executing since a long time now.
It's hard to sort of say. I think we've always just tried to very much do our own thing, and I suppose to me what has always set us a little bit apart from some of the other doom that I hear anyways, especially
yep.
The more extreme kind of doom, is the sort of triple guitar harmonies and the approach compositionally, but also with the guitars. It's very melodic, instead of taking kind of one riff and playing it over and over and over again, more rhythm guitar
yeah.
style, and playing that for 10 minutes. It tends to be, I don't know, a little bit more progressive in a way, I suppose. Like, yeah. We don't tend to dwell on one riff, so I think, you know, not that all other doom bands do, but I think we've never really done that, and the way the guitars work together and the emotions they express has just sort of developed over the years. And from a drummer's perspective, it's I just try and kind of create a bit of a trademark sort of style, but I know it's very minimalist as well, so I just, as far as the drums go, I just write for the music and arrange it as we sort of, these days we work together as a band writing everything. Previously, we always kind of just, we didn't do it that way. We just, me and Damon would jam, and then Damon and Justin would get together and have some ideas, and we'd sort of just hit the studio and be ready to go. But I think these days it's a little bit of a different approach.
Okay.
But it seems to be more coherent than ever before as well. So I think just overall to get the maximum emotion and intensity out of every riff is pretty much the, and to not have it waffle on and just sort of lose direction. It's always got a definite direction, which has evolved over the years.
Yeah. So basically, Mournful Congregation's music can be said as a harmony between minimalism and progression.
I think so, yeah. It's an interesting point. Yeah, there's definitely a progressive element to it. Like, there's, I wouldn't say too minimalist. There's probably more expression in it. But the most minimalist stuff, to me, as far as this band goes, is probably going back to almost when I first joined that, the Tears from a Grieving Heart release. That's probably about as minimalist as we got, because there were less leads, very sparse kind of drumming. And I suppose just as far as composers and probably musicians, you know, you'd hope to grow over the years. So I think that's probably what's happened as well. We think more about the music now and analyse it in a lot of detail. So probably that's starting to shine through on the last couple of releases as well.
All right.
Since Monad, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And I think Monad of Creation is one very good example of what you were talking about, because the album possesses some amazing leads as well as some nice acoustic sections, and especially the title track, which is around 24 minutes, I guess. And it contains such an amazing progressive chords and leads and everything else. So tell us about that album as well.
That was a long time coming, actually. Like, I think it was released in 2005.
But yeah.
We were jamming some of those songs back in the late 90s, for sure. What happened was, around when I joined, Justin, who does a lot of the leads now, he came on board in about 1999. And the first thing we did together as a band was a song, Epitome of Gods and Men Alike, which we did on Split, and that was the first time we'd really all worked together. And it was around that time that we were also working on all the material that would have come out on Monad. So it was just a process of years. We actually recorded it in 2003, and then, well, most of it anyway, and eventually it came out in 2005. But it was a process of years, man, just like, one step at a time. But Damon had written some of those songs definitely well back into the 90s. So, we just, as we got closer to 2003, it was like, oh, we've got to get this album recorded, we've got to do this. So we started working pretty intensely on it. And, it seems a long time ago, though, now, I guess it's eight years since we were in the studio for that album. But, we knew it was sort of the next step up. You know, we'd released the song Epitome, which was, I think, you know, had moved on from the recording before it, which was Tears from a Grieving Heart, and we knew that this really needed to be the next step up, and some of these really epic songs and you know, huge harmonic solos and stuff, that was where that sort of really came into our style, I think. And it seems to have, a lot of people appreciated it, I think.
Yeah, certainly I agree with that, because that album is definitely one of the classics in doom metal, according to my opinion.
Thanks.
And the qualities that you described about the band's music are definitely what has made Mournful Congregation such an amazing entity. And now, talking about lyrics, which are, I think, the most important part as far as doom metal is concerned. And you guys have always used some amazing lyrical themes in all the albums. And it's just another quality which makes the band so incredible and perfect for this style of music. And I guess it even, the song Mother Water, the Great Sea Wept, took some excerpts from H.P. Blavatsky's poems, and that was one epic song. So tell us about your poetic and philosophically enriched lyrical and contents and everything which you use.
Really, all of pretty much throughout the band's history, most of the lyrics have been done by Damon. They're sort of a reflection of his readings and his philosophies, and a lot of them I find, you know, like I can't really comment specifically because I didn't write them, but also they're a bit open to interpretation, you know, what one person would read those lyrics and take out of it, another person would read them and take something different out of it, which is probably pretty cool in itself. And so there is that sort of ambiguity to do with all of the words, but some of the themes have kind of always stayed fairly intact. You know, we do explore certain, most of the darker emotional states of man, and some of the sort of, I know Damon's very into kind of Eastern mysticism, and even early on there was transcendental meditation and things like that that were explored, so they were very much his thing. Like, I'm sure we all have an interest in it, but it was his way of expressing it all, I think, and it was, he has a kind of unique style of his own, which I think, you know, we shouldn't touch. He does it his way, which always suits, plus he's the principal composer, so the lyrics seem to always tie in really well with the emotions of a particular riff or chord, so it's just, it's always more been his thing. I think it's hard to sort of comment for the rest of us on the specifics of the lyrics, we know where it's coming from, but it's also really good that it's left open to individual interpretation, I think.
Yeah. So it's usually Damon who writes all the lyrics?
Maybe Petch might have written a few very early on, but in my time in the band, Damon's done everything, as far as I know. I've never written any, and I'm sure Justin hasn't either, so the last 15 years, it's all Damon, unless it's been, like you said, taken an excerpt from another source that wasn't any of us, but it's more a quotation than anything else, like in Mother Water, but the rest of it is the rest of it's all Damon, yep.
So, what does the album name, The Moon Out of Creation, exactly mean? What was the process behind writing this album?
The actual title of it, or the
title, the specific meaning.
I think it's, again, that's probably one I play in the band, but I've never specifically sat down and asked Damon what exactly does that mean. I think it's more of a universal type theme, you know, that going back to the origins of things, and that's the impression I've got anyway, for sure. I could clarify it with you, but I might have to send you that email about that one.
Okay. And when it comes to lyrics, Funeral Doom is one genre which can strike a chord with the listener, and the listeners can definitely interpret the lyrics in their own styles, like I do. And this style is definitely not for everyone, but for those who have felt the pain and melancholy from within. What is your opinion on this amazing quality of the style? And what do you feel when some people merely diss the style as being depressive and long and boring?
I know you do hear that criticism. I think it's like a style that requires a lot of patience. You know, it's not the sort of thing that you'd put on as easy listening music or something to liven up a party. You know, it's just not what it's about. And I think most people that actually get into this type of music, they have the patience to begin with to sit down and kind of be taken on a journey. That's why I always sort of see our albums, they're more like a journey. You know, you just sit down. Each song is, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes, and if you're just looking for that immediacy, or you're looking for, you know, the most brutal riff or the best blast, you know, it's not really what this style's about. It's an overall atmosphere and journey. And so, to me, I think that's if someone has the mindset where they can take that journey, then for sure they're going to be able to get into this if they're open to that style of music. It doesn't really bother me. There's a lot of people that just aren't going to get it. There's a lot of people that don't get metal in general, and this is a sort of an offshoot from, it's still, I consider, a metal style, but, you know, there could be a lot of people that are into what they'd consider metal that just wouldn't get this kind of music, or depressive black metal, or, you know, different offshoot sort of branches of the metal tree. And, I think it's just, it's whether the person has, usually, I don't know, the people I'd meet, whether it's on tour or that just write to the bands about different things, you know, they tend to be quite intensely into it. I don't think you sort of get people that are, I don't mind a bit of Funeral Doom, but, you know, like, they tend to be really into it, so, which is probably says a lot in itself, I think, that it's a style that's, you either get it or you don't, and usually the people that do get it and like it are very, very passionate about it.
Exactly. You can count me in there.
It's great.
Yeah. And now moving on, the band's third full-length album, The June Frost, came out in mid-2009, and it became a mega favorite for many admirers of doom metal, and especially your band. And it's definitely unlike a lot of cliched funeral doom metal albums which I have heard, and the immensely captivating and surreal dimensions which the music and lyrics provide are just kind of too tough to explain within the mere foundations of words. So I would like to know about this album and the whole compositional processes, and what was on your minds behind writing it?
It was an interesting one. I mean, some of the things that, you know, like the sort of the fans that have been with the band a long time, you know, they might not have liked so much about the album was that it was a bit of a progression from Monad in the sense that it wasn't sort of four epic songs. There were some interludes or sort of different kind of pieces in there. There were also two re-recordings of split songs that we'd done for 7 inches. So we kind of used it as a bit of an opportunity. Like, we wanted to get those songs recorded better to begin with. We're also not the kind of band or musicians to want to just, you know, reproduce the same album every time. We sort of felt we were progressing as a band. And so with the June Frost, we knew we were doing something a bit different. And we also knew there were songs like Suicide Choir that, you know, there were a couple of sort of more epic songs there anyway. So I think the whole idea was, to begin with, to capture all of this, these interludes, epic songs, and, you know, these sort of more 7-inch length type songs, and make it all a cohesive package. But the whole idea as well behind it being the June Frost, sort of we're the opposite here of, say, America and Europe, where in June, July is probably the coldest months of the year. And so if you say the June Frost to someone from, you know, Sweden, they're probably not really going to associate June with cold or, you know, a frosty sort of atmosphere, but to us, that's exactly what it is. So we wanted to kind of get one of these journeys, as we'd call an album, and capture that kind of coldness, a certain atmosphere that sort of ran throughout. And that was kind of the agenda for that release, to kind of make it seem like the heart of an Australian winter, that sort of frosty appeal. And we just worked with it from there.
All right, that sounds very amazing. And even on the album cover, the layout and the entire CD packaging, it's very apparent that you have included the June Frost's real meaning very artistically, like the way the whole white backdrop, the white cover art and the CD art and everything else, that was so amazing. So it is indeed a great package, like where you have described the music according to the album name as far as the whole CD packaging is also concerned. Who did the whole artwork and the layouts for that?
This friend of ours called Pat Parlo, who pretty much is a one-man show in that way. He's quite a gifted photographer and also a graphic designer. So all of those photos, that like the June Frost photo session was done by Pat. He took all the photographs, and then he also created, sat down with Damon and kind of worked out what we wanted to do with the booklet. But he did the whole lot, he's working with us on the next album as well. It's just perfect for the band.
All right, that's nice. And I really like the session picture of the band, which is there on the booklet. Where was that picture actually clicked? Because I see a lot of fans of Mournful Congregation going crazy over that picture, including me, and everyone is just like curious as to where was this picture taken.
Oh, it's a bit of a story to it, actually. If you drive from our city, Adelaide, back towards Loxton, the band's original town, you go past this area called Chain of Ponds. You sort of have to drive out through the hills surrounding our city. And I think driving back to Loxton a few times, Damon had noticed these boulders in a paddock, like these massive rocks sort of in a paddock overlooking a huge big valley. Okay. And he always thought that would be just a fantastic place to do a photo shoot. And so when it came time, probably back in maybe late 2008, I think we did those photos, we just decided we had to find the right day as well, because we didn't want to Photoshop it and fake the atmosphere. You know, we wanted those clouds to be real. So we just waited until there was a sort of a weekend, a day where just the atmosphere, just everything was right, and then we just went, let's do it. And we went out, and we sort of had to jump over some fences onto some private property, and it was pretty amazing. We probably shouldn't have been there legally, but we just thought, nah, this is just perfect. So yeah, at some point there would have been a bunch of metalheads running across the field, like trying to get set up for this photo shoot. But that was it's probably about an hour outside of where we're from, just in the hills, sort of farm type area, I'd say. And
okay.
Yeah, those boulders are like, if you could see behind them, it's like, you know, there would have been all sheep and cows and stuff like that, but fortunately you can't see them in the picture.
All right. But, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a pretty entertaining day, sure.
All right, that's amazing. I'm really amazed with the story which you told me, because from the picture it doesn't appear that you actually had so much of fun and, you know, going on so many places, jumping fences, etc.
The things you do for photo shoots, yeah, I know. You really wouldn't pick it, but it's sort of, sometimes you just have to do something a bit unusual to capture something like that. Like, there's no way there's anywhere.
Yeah.
Just off the side of a road, you know, that anyone could go and stand and do. It's, it wasn't anything too drastic. We just had to jump one fence and kind of go across a bit of a field, but
yeah,
glad no one was watching at the time.
Nice. So who had taken that photograph? The same guy who did all the graphic art for the band?
Yep, Pat's the guy. Okay. He did it all.
Alright, nice. And now, again to the June Frost, talking about the production job. Well, it sounds very atmospheric with the amazing job which has been done on the album, and I especially like how the vocals sound on that album with the added effects which make them sound so dense and echoing. I think that it really enhanced what the band was trying to achieve on that record. So tell us about your usual recording process and which studios you have been using to get the music mixed and mastered on, especially on that one and the previous albums as well.
Yeah, okay. With the June Frost, it was probably the first time that we'd been able to do a lot of the work at Dan's house, because both him and Justin are qualified sound engineers. So with the right equipment, the band can take care of a lot of the recording themselves, you know. So if we went back to Mon at that stage, we didn't really, Damon didn't quite have the setup at his place that we would have liked to be able to do all that there. So a lot of that was done in a studio here, kind of going back and forth. But it costs a lot more money to do it that way to begin with, and it's just a bit more time-consuming because you've got to wait for the studio to have availability to use it and the sound engineer to be available. Whereas with the June Frost, we always did the drums in a proper studio to get the right acoustics and organic sounds and that kind of thing. But this time around and on the June Frost, we've been able to do a lot more guitars and vocals at Damon's place. On this new album, we've done a lot of the guitars in the studio as well because we took a bit more time. But on the June Frost, I think a lot of the guitars were done just in his house, just using his kind of recording setup now and Pro Tools. And same with the vocals. I believe all the vocals would have been done at his place. Okay. So it's cool because it gives a bit more time just to experiment with sounds and to experiment with techniques, probably, that will just get the ultimate sound for what we're trying to achieve. It's not rushed in a studio where you're paying $1,000 a day or something. It's different. It just gives us a lot more time to analyze stuff, to stop, listen back to it and make sure it's sounding right. And, I think Damon probably knew exactly what he was trying to achieve with the vocals, and he just had the time and his own resources to be able to make it happen.
All right. So did Damon actually layer the vocals?
There's probably times when they are layered. Yeah, you know the way, especially with our sound, sometimes it's whispered, sometimes it's the more death metal kind of growls, and other times it's a little bit more in between. So with some sections there might be a bit of layering. I don't know, I wasn't actually there on the June Frost vocal recording session, so I'm not sure how many tracks he would have laid down for it. But a lot of the time we don't tend to like to do stuff that we can't reproduce live now. We would have understood at that point that these songs, or at least some of them, were going to be played live, so you know, there's no point doing some massive big growl with all these different tracks and then having not being able to reproduce that live, which is why we use the triple you know, three guitarists live as well, just so that we can authenticate the sound. So I don't think he would have done anything over the top with the vocals.
Okay, okay.
That couldn't be done.
All right, cool. And what is the usual guitar tuning which is employed for creating Mournful Congregation's music? And could you give us an insight on the equipments used by the entire band?
Okay, it's in A flat, and I think with, I'll just start with myself with the drums. I just use an 8-piece Mapex Pro series and Sabian cymbals. I'm trying to think of the other guys because they've changed equipment recently. Justin uses a Flying V Gibson and a big Marshall stack. I'm trying to think. Damon actually recently got a Gibson as well. I think on other records, he's also got a Jackson Kelly, I think it is, that's used on the recordings too. So that'd probably be the, and the bass is, I think he uses a Warwick on it, so don't quote me on the bass, but yeah, I think that's most of the stuff on this last album. I can't remember the exact guitar setups as far as amps for the June Frost, but I know Marshalls and Gibsons were a big factor on this new one, and that's probably the current sound of the band, I'd say.
All right. That makes me even more intrigued to hear how the new album sounds like.
Yeah, I think it's, without wanting to just say, oh, it's so heavy, it's definitely a step up in heaviness as far as the overall sound goes, and I don't want to give too much away, but the idea was to make it a bit more intense in that way. It's a bit, if we could sound bleaker, we probably do on this recording. It's really intense and heavy. Yeah, so it'd be good to know what people think once it comes out.
All right, geez, that makes me very impatient now. moving on, the band also did an amazing cover of Thurgotaun's Elemental for the Rising of Yoke So Toth, a tribute to Thurgotaun album released by Solitude Productions. How did this deal came along, and tell us about your experiences while recording this classic cover.
Okay, I think Damon was in touch with the guy that runs Solitude. I think they're out of Russia, and he'd obviously just written to a bunch of bands and said, look, I want to put together this this tribute, and from what we understood and what it turned out to be, he wanted to get kind of doom bands and also non-doom bands to do kind of their interpretations of these songs, and so it sounded pretty cool. And I think from when we were contacted about it, has to go back to maybe 2007, I think. From that point of contact through to when that the release actually came out was quite a long time. I don't know whether we were one of the first bands to get it done, or I'm not sure, but there was a bit of a gap from when we recorded that song until it eventually came out. So I think it was our winter in 2007 that, and on that particular song, that was just myself and Damon. And because there weren't, you know, leads in that song. And and so, yeah, we just recorded it at his place, Damon's home studio, one night in, I think, about July 2007. And our idea going into it, because before I joined Mournful, I didn't really know much about Forgotten, but Damon put me onto them, and, you know, just amazing band. And Damon had always been really into them too, so we really wanted to honour it instead of sort of going, okay, that's a Forgotten song, and we'll just tear it apart and do it our own way. We kind of wanted to honour the memory of Forgotten by actually becoming them, so I tried to learn the drum parts perfectly, tried to get the tuning spot on, you know, to actually sound like Mournful had become Forgotten in a sense, like to really try and authenticate that sound. And we just did our best at that. I don't know how well we pulled that off, but it's, yeah, we didn't really want to go and just mess around with something we already thought was legendary. We just did our tribute to them, which was to get as close as we could to even the vocals. I don't know if you've noticed Damon's kind of vocals on that track are quite different maybe to what he'd normally do, but it was just to try and get as close to capturing, you know, Forgotten in Finland in the early 90s as we possibly could.
Yeah.
And we just did our best at it.
Yeah, I think the band really did well on that cover. The way you have described it, I think you have definitely hit the nail there.
Cool, cheers.
And as far as the record label is concerned, I think you have been associated with Weird Truth Productions. And since when have you been dealing with the label? And are you satisfied with the overall promotional tactics?
Yeah, definitely. I think Makoto first contacted Damon around the turn of the century, around about 2000, I think, because he was looking at just releasing on CD, I think, just the first couple of demos.
Yeah.
And they must have got talking at the time, and one thing led to another, and basically that's how the dawning of Mournful Hymns came about. Instead of just releasing the first couple of demos, it was more or less a compilation of everything that had been done up to that point. And so that's when we began working with him, and he did such a great job on that. He's just such a cool guy to deal with that we just continued with it, because there was no reason to really change. He was just the ideal kind of label, but very supportive. He was totally into the music as well, so it wasn't like he was doing this to make money out of it or anything like that. No, he was just a genuine fan and musician running his own label in Japan. And we saw that firsthand when we toured Japan last year. He's just, you know, the best guy he could ever meet. He's just a champion. And he pretty much runs his label from his apartment, and he's just totally into it. So, yeah, it's always been a real pleasure to work with Makoto. And I think a lot of other bands that are on Weird Truth or deal with him would say the same thing.
All right, that's nice. Great to know about this label and the guy's dedication. That is definitely important for being in the underground metal scenario if you are a record label or something.
That's right. Yep.
And moving back to the layouts of your albums, one thing which really captured my attention is the amazing statements which you have put on the albums. Like the June Frost had this statement called, "Doom is for those whose hearts beat slow." And whereas the Monad of Creation reads, "Macrocosmic doom for microcosmic beings." Well, when I read these statements for the first time, I was like, wow, this is amazing. So, I mean, I think a lot of fans also feel the same. And reading these statements, they just kind of dissolve into your heart. And you can say that, yes, these are really the feelings which this music is all about. So, how did you come up with such amazing statements? And what was the reason of putting them on the layouts?
Again, it's something that I have to just attribute to Damon. He just comes up with these things that suit. I guess overall, you know, he writes the lyrics, he writes the, you know, as far as the compositions go, he writes all the basic outlines of all the songs. So he's got an overall picture of the whole feel of a particular album. And so I guess to take one line that kind of sums it up or suits that release is kind of what he's done, and I think in both of those cases it does suit. It's more or less getting a message or just an idea that people can sort of, again, you know, like the line, "Doom is for those whose hearts beat slower," you know, how one person would interpret that or take that on board is going to vary to the next. It's just a way of kind of getting a general feeling that that album would convey across to an audience, I think. But, yeah, it seems to be a bit of a trademark now to have one sort of line that comes out with each release that sort of says it all in a way, or is a fairly profound sort of statement that's still slightly open to individual interpretation.
All right. Now I'm really anxious to see what the upcoming album's inlay reads.
Yeah. I'm not, to be honest, I don't even know myself yet.
Okay, I'll keep it as a surprise for myself. Let's see.
Yeah.
And now I think this would be a hard question for you to answer. Which particular Mournful Congregation album are you most satisfied with yourself?
Probably, I think when this new one comes out, the way it's going, I will say that, because we've spent so much more time working as a group on it. It was a definite working in the rehearsal room week after week, developing it, whereas before we hadn't quite operated in that sort of way. But up until this point, if I'm just going to comment on stuff that's been released, I think it's definitely got to be June Frost, because it was just... it felt more up to date to begin with. Like I said about Monad of Creation, it was great that it had such an impact when it was released, but it also, that material spanned a very long period of time.
Yeah.
Whereas the June Frost was getting more up to where Mournful was in 2009. It was, sort of felt more current, like this is an indication of where we are right now, and this new one coming out now is even more that that's where we are in 2011. So I'd say definitely June Frost is the most satisfying. Plus, we just much more thought had gone into that than ever before. We'd really begun to analyse things quite intensely. And just some of the songs on there are probably, you know, quite close to me or very, you know, probably my favourite type of songs that we've done so far.
Okay. All right, that's nice. And, well, the band was not really doing any live shows in the long career, but you started touring after the release of the June Frost. So what finally gave you the drive to exhibit your music in front of a live audience with that particular release?
It was just sort of coincidence, I guess, that it happened around the release of June Frost, because what had happened, we'd been asked before to play live, like even back around 2000, we'd sort of had a couple of extra members on board at the time, and we were thinking that, yeah, maybe one day we'll try and take this live, and then a couple of members left, so we're sort of, the lineup diminished again, so we always knew that to kind of, to do it live, we needed to, because we were always, you know, recording over the last 10 years as a three-piece, and we knew to do it live, we needed to have five, because we'd need, you know, three guitars and bass. So when we were just, you know, hey, come and play, yeah, well, we weren't going to put together the effort of training up a bass player and another guitarist just to do some gigs in Adelaide and Melbourne and Sydney or something. It just never really seemed worth the amount of effort we'd have to do just to play some local shows in Australia. Yeah. So it was when, I think probably around 2007 or 8, people started asking us to do stuff overseas, and these offers just got better, and then the whole idea of tour packages and stuff started coming together. So that was when we realised, yeah, we can definitely take this to the world. We just needed to kind of organise a lineup to do it. So that's what we did once we knew, yep, this is a viable thing to actually go to Europe with this. We just recruited a bassist and our former guitarist and drummer, Ben. It's still the same lineup, doing all the touring shows. So that was pretty much it. Like, just once we knew we had something to work towards that was really worth putting in the hard yards as a five-piece band to do it live, that's when we decided, yeah, we'll go ahead and do this. So I guess it did take us 15 years to get to that point, but I think it's worth it, it seems to. Cause there's a different dimension to the band live as well. I think anyway, like the experience live would probably be something else that we can offer the listener to.
Okay. And what was your first ever gig, and what do you feel how the gig went along, and what was the reaction of the people who were visiting that thing?
It was in our hometown here in Adelaide, back in January of 2009.
Yeah.
It was a pretty intense show, actually, because we played with a couple of local bands, but also a band from Brisbane called Portal, who were very, very extreme, kind of, I don't know what...
Yeah, I love Portal myself.
Yeah, there's no way to describe Portal to someone that hasn't heard them, you know, it's just so full on. Yeah, to have Portal on the bill with us, where just their costumes and everything. I think some people in the crowd just had, you know, Mournful played and then Portal played after us. And I think it just blew their mind to go from how intense and crushing our set could be, and then Portal come on and just pulverize the crowd. So it was a really intense show, actually. And the turnout was fantastic. We had no idea what to expect, to be honest, because we'd never played before. We had... no real gauge of how many people would show up or whether there was even interest in this style, you know. So it was a really, really cool show, actually. It turned out to be quite a big crowd, and and with the lineup, it was very diverse and very extreme.
All right, interesting. And as far as the international shows are concerned, which would be your favorite one?
My favourite show that we've done so far, I think, was in Rotterdam in Holland, just because it was pretty much two tours crossing paths. So there was this massive show at a place called Baroque, which is just kind of the metal venue in Rotterdam. Okay. So there was that lineup, because on the tour with us, there was us, Morning Beloved, and Longing for Dawn. And then on this other tour was Evoken and Isole, and I'm trying to think of who else, Officium Trist from Rotterdam themselves, and it was their 15-year anniversary. So it was kind of this six doom band lineup at this fantastic venue. It was just, yeah, it was amazing, actually. So that's probably, as far as the gigs we've done, yeah, probably the coolest one we've been involved with, I'd say.
Wow, that particular gig you told about sounds awesome. Six amazing doom metal bands on one platter. What am I doing in India?
Oh, I think it was a rare thing. Like, it was just because it just happened to be that they were coming from Germany, I think, and we were heading towards Germany, and the tours just perfectly aligned in Holland for Officium Trist to have this kind of anniversary show, and it was
okay.
Yeah, it was really awesome, actually.
And are you guys playing the US this year? I think the Rites of Darkness Tree Fest is supposed to have you guys on the bill. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's our first US show, so we're really looking forward to it. That's in December.
Yeah,
so it's cool. And I think Evoken are on that bill as well. So
well, absolutely.
Great to see those guys again. Yeah, you should come across.
Yeah, I hope so, but I don't have the money to go there.
Oh, damn it. Oh, we'll have to get to India one day.
Yeah, it should be. And even that festival has an amazing lineup with various death, black, doom bands and lots of great bands who are giving first-time appearances in US. So I think the people would really expect an intense 2 or 3 day festival over there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, I couldn't believe it when I saw Mortuary Drape playing it.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. It's like a dream come true.
Yeah, I mean, Evoken, Mournful Congregation and Cyanide on one bill. I think it's going to be an amazing fest.
I hope so, man. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, certainly. And any upcoming tours inside about from that one?
Usually what we do, I mean, we haven't locked in any dates, but I would say we'll probably do some Australian shows prior to that, because the album comes out around the middle of the year. I think our aim is around August, September to do a bunch of shows here in Australia, and then to go to the US in December. So I'd say between now and America, there'll be a few Australian shows lined up as well, but we just haven't got definite dates for that just yet.
All right. And tell us about your other band, Zunzu.
Oh, it's not my band. It's a friend of mine, Don. He put that band together. I've done some session work for them, like back in around 2007, I think, just on one of their recordings, and they played with Dismember when they played here in Australia, so I helped out then. But they've since got, I really didn't have the time to join anything else as a full-time member, so it was just while they were kind of filling the drum stall with someone permanent. But yeah, they're great guys. I mean, we're all really good mates, and the drummer from Zunzu, Selen, he also plays in Stargazer with Damon.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like this pool of musicians here in Australia that, you know, quite often people will be involved with more than one band or helping out more than one band and that sort of thing. But as far as I'm not like an official member of Zunzu or anything like that, just a good friend.
So what is the music of Zunzu like? Because I think the lyrical themes are revolving around some Japanese philosophies, I guess.
Yeah, Don, the main guy, is he's really into kind of Oriental culture, and so I think a lot of the themes of the music go back to that sort of stuff. But as far as the style goes, it's really pretty full-on death metal. It doesn't have a hell of a lot of Oriental scales or stuff like that necessarily in the music. I know they use a lot of like Kodo effects and things like that that add a certain sort of Eastern flavour to it, but I mean, when it's all said and done, they're still very much just a brutal death metal band.
Okay. Nice, because it's kind of unusual to see an Australian band singing about Japanese theories and stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's a unique sort of take on things as well. I think the name Zunzu comes from the guy that wrote The Art of War, and so there's he's just expanded those themes a lot, but a lot of it is to do with the ancient Japanese or Asian culture and art and that sort of thing. It's really cool. He's very into it.
All right, nice. Now a cliched question, and that is, which would be your favorite releases of all time, and especially the ones which have influenced you on a mass level to become a musician?
Okay, wow, it's a long question. I reckon two big ones. Probably Beneath the Remains by Sepultura. When that first came out, I was pretty much a young drummer.
Okay.
And to hear another young, I might have only been about 12 or 13 at that time, but I knew that Igor was also a really young drummer, and to hear a guy that was coming from a place like Brazil being able to just play with such intensity, like it was, you know, looking back on it now, I still regard that as a classic album, and I know the band changed a lot in the years after that, but that was definitely something that inspired me. But I think when it came to wanting to be a very good drummer, improved technically and on an all-round kind of musical level, it was Focus by Cynic. When that was released, that just influenced me hugely. That was because I was into death and that sort of stuff, and sort of the more progressive technical side of death metal. But when that release came out, I think just the drumming on it, it just blew my mind. I couldn't believe that a young band was playing at this level. So I started practicing a real lot after Focus came out. It was just something to kind of, you know, look up to. And those guys obviously went on. They're still doing their thing. They're just such amazing musicians, the whole band pretty much. So, personally as a drummer, I was always into other stuff, grew up listening to Metallica, but nothing blew me away 100% like that until Focus came out, because I was really into a lot of, I was taking drum lessons privately and getting into a lot of prog music from the 70s, and the drum teacher was really into, King Crimson and all that sort of stuff. So I liked a lot of the more technical drummers, the guys that had worked with Frank Zappa and that kind of thing. But when I think Cynic came along, it seemed like they'd kind of combined death metal and progression and fusion and really technical playing. They just put the package together. I think it was about 1993, and it was just, that changed my life pretty much, that album.
Okay, so you basically have been influenced by some great death metal drummers. So what does it actually feel to play in a funeral doom metal band where you don't actually need to exhibit any blast or any fast-paced sections?
Yeah. It's funny, sometimes it's different. I'm so used to it now. When the first couple of jams I would have had with Damon would have been a little bit comical if we had video to look back on it now, because I think he was just kind of trying to explain to me air drumming, that no, we don't need to have, take that hi-hat out and take that bass drum out, because I naturally wanted to play more than Funeral Doom requires, so I had to kind of train myself to pull back and really start to just do what was needed for the song and for the atmosphere, rather than necessarily what felt natural at the time. But over the years, now it feels very natural. Now if I hear a riff for Mournful, I pretty much have a very good idea of what's required, what I should put there, and we'll always talk about stuff, but it feels so much more natural now. And I think it was just a test of time, but it is still hard, I find, playing, especially live, playing tight at that speed is harder to me than pretty much anything else, because any stuff up is so noticeable. If you're just slightly off, it stands out. If you're playing it, five times that speed, you can be like a millisecond out and it's almost not noticeable. But when you're breaking the beats down to such, slow BPMs, you really have to be, because we don't, have clicks in our ears or anything live, so we've just got to be well rehearsed and really attuned to each other. But it is a challenge. I find it very, I'm used to it, but it's hard. It's hard to play that slow, that tight. But that's our job.
Cool. That's cool. And now I would like to know about some specific doom metal releases which have influenced Mournful Congregation on a whole.
I think it was probably early on, because these days we'd all listen to different stuff and be influenced by different stuff, and even the bands we see on tour will just be like, wow, you might not have heard that band before, but they'll blow you away. But early on, I think the stuff that really influenced Ben and Damon when they were starting out, well, definitely The Gothen, like Epicus Metallicus, the Candlemass release, probably early Cathedral, Forest of Equilibrium sort of era. I know they were big influence on those guys, and once I joined the band, I kind of retrospectively went back and discovered some of this stuff, and, you know, that became an influence on me too. But, yeah, in high school, those guys were obviously really into that, and that was their inspiration for starting a band like that. I think it was just always intended that they'd kind of take it to the next level, like, you know, take these inspirations and then, just make it more crushing, slower, heavier, more emotionally extreme. And hopefully we've kind of carried on that legacy in our own way.
Yes, you certainly have done that. And any new bands and releases which you are listening to these days? Anything interesting which you would like to share?
Trying to think of stuff that other people might not have heard. Band we played with in Finland called Prophetess. They're awesome. Absolutely awesome. I know they've got a new, because they've signed to Weird Truth. I think their new album should be out sometime this year. But they're just brilliant. There are a few bands that we had heard or just saw live and realised how incredible they are when we're touring. Ataraxy were another one, and they're also on Weird Truth.
Another really favorite of mine.
There's a few out there, and they're sort of underrated, you know. People just don't seem to know about them, but there's some really great ones. There was them, Fata Malissimum. They're another band from France that were really great.
Okay.
Also liked Opus from Germany. There's quite a few around. I can't think of specific release names of all these things, so I'll just have them as MP3s. But all those bands, for anyone that's into extreme doom or death doom and so on, they're well worth checking out.
Alright, some nice mentions over there. Bands like Ataraxy are like a big favorite of mine too, and even the new Office release was very amazing. Definitely a band to look ahead in the future. And what do you think about the comeback of the Mighty Disembowelment in the form of Dusk?
We'll be playing with those guys this year, because I spoke to the drummer. He actually emailed us a little while ago just asking if we were doing any Australian shows this year. So I think Disembowelment and Mournful will play in Melbourne sometime later this year. I can't wait. That's just, we never thought that would happen, put it that way. It's really cool. I don't really know, I know that Dusk played a weekend or two ago in Melbourne. I couldn't go, but I think they're just carrying on pretty much what Disembowelment was, and they're definitely playing some old Disembowelment tunes. So I think it's great that they've come back, and, you know, we get to actually see some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's right. I wish if I could attend that gig. I mean, Mournful and Disembowelment together, unimaginable.
It's pretty unimaginable for us. I mean, even though they're from Australia, they were sort of, you know, they were releasing stuff, so long ago. And, it's just, you know, internationally legendary. So to get the chance for us to play with them is just, it's kind of mind-blowing. It will be great.
All right. I'm sure that that gig is going to be mind-blowing and definitely a historic moment. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Sure we will.
I think this will be enough for today. And thanks a lot for this amazing interview. I mean, I personally like doing this a lot because I got to know a lot of things which were there in the back of my mind, which I wanted to know about the band, as always. And really, I'm honored to do this interview with you. And thanks a lot for this, man.
Oh, no problems. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to do it. Sorry, had a few obstacles getting it organized, but that's totally cool. Like, it's well worth it. And thanks for giving us some exposure in the subcontinent. That's an area we'd really like to get a bit more known in. So it's really fantastic that you're taking the time to do this for us.
The pleasure is totally mine. And I am sure that this interview is definitely going to turn more heads towards your style, your band. I'm sure that people will definitely be interested to know about you and the music.
Fantastic. Thank you, man. That'd be really great.
All right. So I'll just wait for the upcoming album, and I hope that we can see that album in India also. And all the best for that one. And keep me updated about the release and everything else related to that.
Certainly will, mate. You'll be one of the first. Don't worry.
All right. Take care, mate. Hope to see you from you soon.
Thank you. See you next time.
Yeah.